Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 1153 of the Juicebox Podcast. I'm speaking today with a married couple, Riva and Adam. They have three children. One of them has type 1 diabetes. Riva also has lupus and possibly a thyroid issue. Her mother had hypothyroidism. Their child was diagnosed very early, so we're going to be talking about everything from breastfeeding to what they're doing now. Please remember while you're listening that nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan. If you'd like to help with type 1 diabetes research and you're a U.S. resident, please listen up. The T1D Exchange is looking for you. That's caregivers of type 1s as well as type 1s themselves. All they want you to do is take a short 10-minute survey, and that's it. You'll be helping with type 1 diabetes research. T1DExchange.org/juicebox. Head over there now. You'll be done before you know it. Don't forget to save 40% off of your entire order at CozyEarth.com. All you have to do is use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout. That's JUICEBOX at checkout to save 40% at CozyEarth.com. This episode of the JUICEBOX Podcast is sponsored by Eversense. The Eversense CGM is more convenient, requiring only one sensor every 6 months. It offers more flexibility with its easy-on, easy-off smart transmitter and allows you to take a break when needed. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. This episode of the JUICEBOX Podcast is sponsored by Touched by Type 1. TouchedByType1.org. And find them on Facebook and Instagram. Touched by Type 1 is an organization dedicated to helping people living with type 1 diabetes. And they have so many different programs that are doing just that. Check them out at touchedbytype1.org.
My name is Riva. I am a full-time mother to three kids under the age of 9. The oldest is neurodivergent. Our middle is starting kindergarten. And our baby is 2, and he is our type 1.
So you're tired.
It's a lot.
Yeah, no kidding. Give me your oldest age.
8.
8. Kindergarten's what, 5?
She's newly 6.
Oh, happy birthday. And 2. Okay. Who else is here with us?
And I'm Adam. I'm Riva's husband. I'm the dad to all these three kids and also lacking in sleep. I have a background in biomedical engineering, so I've really gone deep on a lot of the details on the biology and the math. So that's kind of my role in this.
How are we going to refer to your kids? Just we keeping their names out of it, or?
I'm really torn.
Well, for now, why don't we just say type 1, kindergarten, and neurodivergent? How's that sound?
Sure.
All right. Well, and if you get more comfortable, we can do whatever you want. So, Riva, fair to say this is all Adam's fault, right? Like, you weren't after him. He came towards
you. He does blame it on me.
Thank you.
Every time I look at my wife and she's uncomfortable, I think, oh, I did that to her.
Thank you. You know how things work.
I saw her. She looked attractive. I started talking to her, and now look what happened. Oh my gosh. All right. Do either of you have any autoimmune issues? And you know what I've decided when I ask questions and they're for both of you, let's just go to Riva first so you don't have to wonder who's going to talk.
Yeah. Perfect. I have, I think, a non-diagnosis. I have had a couple of doctors float the idea of something called incomplete lupus.
What do they say that is?
It's lupus that can't be diagnosed with a blood test,
okay,
but the symptoms match.
What are your symptoms?
I haven't had a flare in a little while. So hair loss, frequent UTIs, frequent upper respiratory, very tired, anemic, itchy, like rashes. And it seemed to coincide with postpartum twice.
Okay. How long did you have postpartum for?
And I'm actually saying postpartum, not vis-a-vis depression.
Just the time after birth.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. So then it lasted for forever. Gotcha. When did this come up in your life? How long have you been dealing with this?
I guess I started first feeling like something was amiss about a year after our first was born.
Okay. About 7 years ago. And you don't have any other autoimmune stuff, celiac, thyroid?
Again, thyroid has never been able to be confirmed with blood. That's been floated to me.
Yeah, Riva, let me jump in here for a second. So a lot of your symptoms are thyroid, like not that things don't overlap ever, but what do you mean it's not confirmable? What's your TSH been when they've tested it?
It's been normal every year of my life.
What's the number?
I don't know the number offhand.
So figure out the number, because TSH is an interesting one. The range, I think, is, 4 to 10. They'll call normal, but any good doctor will medicate TSH over 2 with thyroid symptoms. So you could have a TSH of 5, which would be crippling. Your hair would fall out. You'd be tired. You wouldn't be able to get rested. You might have skin irritations, all this stuff. And literally like Synthroid, and like 2 weeks from now, you'll feel better. And the reason I bring it up, not just because I've heard it from so many people, but because this exact thing happened to my wife. She had Arden, her thyroid went bonkers. We took her to an endocrinologist. They heard all of her symptoms, tested her blood, came back and said, well, it's not your thyroid. That lab is normal. But that was exactly the problem. So Adam, you're good with bio, or if you're good with computers, pull up somebody's blood test while we're talking and we'll take a look. But if not, Riva, no kidding, get off the phone, call the doctor, find out what your last TSH was. If it's over like 2, 2.1, tell them you want to be medicated for your thyroid. I bet you feel better in a week.
My mom has thyroid. Really? I know you're going to start screaming at me.
Yes, I mean, not screaming, because we're not married, so I'm not angry at you. So, ruining my life. But do you think non-married people are listening going, what are they talking about? Just find people. Yeah, okay. Wait till you try it.
Right.
So what does your mom have?
I don't know if she has hypo or hyper. I don't know. She's on Synthroid.
She's on thin. So she's got hypothyroidism. Did they ever call it Hashimoto's? This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the Eversense CGM. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. The Eversense CGM is the only long-term CGM with 6 months of real-time glucose readings, giving you more convenience, confidence, and flexibility. And you didn't hear me wrong. I didn't say 14 days. I said 6 months. So if you're tired of changing your CGM sensor every week, you're tired of it falling off, or the adhesive not lasting as long as it should, or the sensor failing before the time is up, if you're tired of all that, you really owe it to yourself to try the Eversense CGM. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. I'm here to tell you that if the hassle of changing your sensors multiple times a month is just more than you want to deal with, if you're tired of things falling off and not sticking, or sticking too much, or having to carry around a whole bunch of extra supplies in case something does fall off, then taking a few minutes to check out EversenseCGM.com/juicebox might be the right thing for you. When you use my link, you're supporting the production of the podcast and helping to keep it free and plentiful. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox.
No. And there was a great, just like a breastfeeding gynecologist at Chapel Hill.
Oh, okay.
Said, oh, this is Hashimoto's.
Well, it makes...
I was really excited about that. But it came back and she said, you're fine.
Yeah. So breastfeeding gynecologist is going to be the name of my first sitcom that I write. I just decided. Everyone would tune in at least once. They'd be like, what's this about?
Awful.
No, it was the way you said it. It cracked me up. but yeah, just get the number or have it retested or whatever. Listen, I'm not a doctor. I'm an idiot, but I've talked to enough people and I've seen it enough in my own family. Like for instance, when my son got Hashimoto's, he got his only symptom besides looking back. He was probably a little, coarse, like his temper was kind of like off, like his personality. But his hair was falling out. No one noticed because he had long hair and he didn't notice because he thought that was just a thing that happened. He had low iron at one point that we had to pump back up, which by the way, has never happened to him again. And rash was his big one. So if his body heated up, he would say that his skin felt itchy. Like, you know, the first couple days of summer when you go outside and your body's not used to the heat and the sun and you get that flush feeling for a second. That would come over him and then he'd break out in hives, waist to neck, and they would itch incredibly. And the only way he could make it stop was to go out. Like it was November when it happened. Luckily, he'd have to walk outside without his shirt on until his core temperature came down and then it would just go away. So I don't know. I don't want to get stuck on this, but let's just say if this is it, I'd like a Christmas card. That's all. But I'm not giving you my address. So just email it to me. What else? Anything else? Now we got your mom with thyroid. Anybody else in the family?
I mean, Adam will chime in that his mom had everthyroid removed, but there's nothing else.
Like,
you know, we got the, is there type 1 in your family? There's one person, I think, again, Adam can chime in, but his grandfather had what everyone believes is type 2. Mm-hmm. We have been told by, you know, a few people have floated the idea. A great person at TrialNet, actually, she said, you know, we didn't know back then if maybe someone had type 1 and died before, you know, that was really discovered. It may have been called type 2.
Just diabetes too. Yeah.
Adam,
I like it when she tells me what you're going to say. And then says it. This is my favorite part so far.
It's good for him.
Yeah, I'm used to it. I just nod.
It's my favorite part. Adam's got a great story that I'll tell you now about his grandfather. Nothing.
I already told you.
Nothing better is going
to
happen.
You don't need to say anything, Adam.
yeah, just sit there, buddy. You've done enough, okay? Mm-hmm. You couldn't go after a different girl. Leave her alone.
Oh, gosh.
So, it was the pandemic. Things were limited.
How long have you guys been together?
Almost 25 years.
Oh, wow. You've been married for 25 years?
No, we got married about, I think, 11.
Oh, okay.
It's not an about. There's an exact number, but...
we don't need the number.
13.
13.
Oh, my God. Remember when I said my favorite thing was going to be when Riva told your stories? Now it's when she doesn't know how long you've been married. Riva, are you cloudy? Do you have, brain fog?
Definitely.
All the time?
I'm so tired. Sawyer didn't, or I just said his name, but he didn't sleep like a normal baby. You know, he's getting diabetes and now he has diabetes. Mm-hmm. So, I haven't been rested for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years.
Saturday when you make Adam get up really early and let you sleep and you sleep 12 hours straight. Cause you do, right?
I sleep 8. On my mornings off.
You wake up and feel rested?
I feel better than I normally do.
Okay. But rested? Do you even remember that feeling?
Even if I was physically rested, you know, there's a new mental load that has changed how I feel.
Adam, do you notice it? Like I used to, I'll lead you a little bit and you can tell me if you're on board. I stopped recognizing my wife's personality when she had a problem with her thyroid that nobody was dealing with. Not that yours, by the way, couldn't just be lupus, but she was just different. And no matter how many times I tried to explain it to her, she didn't know what I was talking about. Like, she just thought, you know, this is how I am. But she wasn't. Like, I remember her starting to take Synthroid and thinking, like, wow, watch, her personality came back, and her temperament, all different kinds of things. But I was wondering if you've noticed anything like that.
I mean, it's been hard to disambiguate what's been the newly diagnosed type 1 diabetes load and any kind of effect a thyroid disorder might have.
Yeah.
So I think we both changed a lot since the diagnosis. Have I noticed a change? Yes, but not an unexpected one. And I'm sure I've changed too.
Yeah. So for everybody listening, not just you two, I would warn against the narrative. But this happened. So this is expected because this happened. Like, at some point, you should try to start expecting better than that. And because, I don't know if that makes sense or not. I don't know if I'm being clear.
It does. We just started to experience it.
Yeah. Good for better. You. Also, by the way, congratulations on being the first person to say disambiguate on the podcast ever. Way to go. That was amazing. All right. So we got your backgrounds. Tell me a little bit about your son's diagnosis. What did you notice first?
I just explained this to a diabetes startup yesterday, so it's fresh. Mm-hmm. Sawyer seemed like a very typical newborn, and we bragged to everyone that he was our easiest baby, but he was a newborn. So you go into that nadir. When we came out of the 3 to 6 month kind of newborn period, we expected things to naturally sort of start to get better, mm-hmm. easier, and they didn't. They started to get worse. Sawyer stopped sleeping. He did not transition to solid food. Over time, from probably 6 months to a year, started to cry all the time. Changed temperament. Went from happy to needy. Sleep continued to deteriorate. We started to take him to pediatrician more for ear checks. You know, they would check to see, oh, is he teething? All the usual things they may check for.
Yeah.
He's fine, he's fine, he's fine. Around 12 months, his weight started to drop. And the pediatrician said, you're still breastfeeding. You know, you got to get some nutrient-dense foods into him. Maybe breastfeed a little less. Had I breastfed him less, he wouldn't have been getting any nutrients.
Right, because he wasn't going to eat anything else.
He would try to eat sometimes. Not much interest in food. And we love food. Hmm. We're like, our kids love food, and we were not novice parents.
Yeah, right.
And Adam kept saying, I don't think he eats food. When he would eat, vomiting, we found out he had food allergies, milk, soy, egg, sesame, and they continued to mount foods that he would try. He would vomit or get hives. Hmm.
Do you have any food allergies, Riva?
I do. I have shellfish.
Is it hard for you to talk about him like he's a problem? Does it make you sad? Like, while you were describing it, it seemed difficult for you. I was wondering why.
Because we're both feel so let down by the people who are supposed to be helping us keep a baby safe.
Okay.
We still feel really frustrated by the lack of BG checks at these appointments.
Yeah.
Urgent care saw him. At one point, he went to the ER for breathing problems. So many people had eyes on him. Nobody poked his finger.
And that went on for like 6 months?
Probably about from age one-ish, or maybe just before one. I think it was around Christmas time, and he was diagnosed the following summer. Wow. So 6 to 8 months.
When he was diagnosed, what was his blood sugar, and what did they say they thought his A1C was?
4.72. And Adam might remember, it was in the high eights.
Yeah, it was 8-something. I can't recall exactly.
How close to a coma do you think he was?
I think close. I had picked him up a few times in the night, and he, when he was crying or whimpering, and he was limp. And this was a symptom we described to a doctor. We thought it was teething. And I think at the time it was probably low blood sugar.
Yeah.
And we thought maybe, okay, he's teeth pain. And so we would give him, you know, ibuprofen, which is kind of like full of sugar, the kids' version anyway. So I don't know if that got him out of any kind of, you know, traumatic medical emergency medical experiences, but that was part of the symptoms we described, and I think probably very close.
Yeah. Well, isn't that interesting? It's another example of like lulling yourself into acceptance. Like, I mean, honestly, if it hadn't happened so slowly, right? Because that's what gets you. If it hadn't happened so slowly, if you would have randomly walked into his bedroom one night, picked him up, and he was limp, you would have just gone right to the ER, right?
Yep.
Yeah. But because it happens so slowly, we start to accept it. It's the wrong word, but, you know, it becomes normal. And then it's the same brain function that lets us gain weight slowly. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. Or to make bad decisions slowly. We get a little used to, we cross that line, and then we wait, and then we cross it again. You just keep doing that. Before you know it, you can't see where the first line was anymore, and you feel like you're in a place you belong. And then that frustration. Have you talked to anybody about that, Riva? Like, it's been a little while now. Like, I don't want you to feel mad forever about this, because this happens a lot. I know it sucks, but you're actually one of the lucky ones because you figured it out.
I mean, I will say I'm one of the more hyper vigilant humans you might ever meet. Mm-hmm. And I don't get lulled very much, but it took us, we were trying to put pieces together, you know, and I also am very intuitive, and my gut, and even Adam's gut, he doesn't have any intuition. We kept saying to each other, you know, in passing, something's off. Something's not adding up. And we're intelligent people. We're educated. We have great social networks. So it's not to say that we were not trying to put the puzzle together.
You know, I don't think you weren't. I just mean that it's the, you stop seeing things. I don't know. It feels like you can stop seeing things for what they are because they so slowly creep up on you. It's the, what is it? The frog in the pot thing, right? You can throw a frog in a pot of boiling water and it'll jump right out. But if you put it in a pot of cold water and warm it up slowly, it'll sit there and happily die. Like that I'm just always, not that that was happening to you, but it happens to people. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I bring it up in these conversations so that, you know, people might stop for a second, step back, accept, you know, look at their lives and go, oh, we are nowhere near where I thought we were. Mm-hmm. But the thing you're talking about, listen, I have that too. Constantly thinking about things. What is that? What's happening? It's not a fun way to live, but when you have autoimmune stuff in your life, it's kind of necessary. And even that, like, intersecting each other in the house or during the day and going, did you notice that this happened? What do you think of that? And then having like a 4-minute conversation, then continuing to move on. I've lived through that moment a few thousand times. So I definitely know what you're talking about. I just mean, you sound angry that nobody gave him a finger stick, and I understand why, and it's reasonable, but at some point, I mean, But I took Arden to the doctor for weeks about things. And they were like, oh, it's this, it's that, it's the hand, foot, and mouth is came back. That never happens. Like the doctor, who's a friend of mine, actually said, that never happens. That's weird. And then we just kept moving. I called him again. I was like, hey, you know, Arden just had a bowel movement and I was able to, with my fingers, crush it into dust. Oh, she's just dehydrated. Try this. But I mean, think of that explanation. Like there were like pebbles that if I squeezed both sides of the diaper, just exploded into dust. Does that sound like just dehydration to you? Right? Yeah. And so these things happen on and on and on, but in the end, no one's looking for this. And I've seen, it's a number of years ago now, one organization, was it Beyond Type 1? One organization got it in their head that they were going to contact every pediatrician's office in the country and give them literature about this. And they tried and they got volunteers and it fell apart eventually. You would think it's such a simple thing, but it's incredibly difficult to do, you know, to do that advocacy. So this is a great way to bring out that story and hopefully people will share it. And not go through what you went through, because your son, you know, really could have had a very poor end if somebody didn't figure it out, but they did. So now you're breastfeeding a baby with diabetes, a year and a half old with diabetes. Is that right?
So he's two now.
Okay.
And I weaned him, I think in May.
Okay. About 4 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how long did you do breastfeeding with type one for?
So he was diagnosed a couple days shy of 15 months, and he was March, April, like 26 months, I think, when I weaned him.
Mm-hmm. How was that? Was it hard to bolus for? Was he, I mean,
Adam will need to chime in.
Yeah.
This we've pre-agreed to.
Adam, you're allowed to speak about this. And even though you have no intuition, I think you will be a reasonable person to talk on the subject.
Well, I appreciate the vote of confidence by both of you.
Of course.
So before diagnosis, Sawyer was feeding on demand. And that was the first thing we had to get our heads around, to not do that anymore. So that was a tough transition, especially because, as Raven mentioned, he wasn't eating food yet. But once he started having insulin, he started eating everything. So that was a easier transition than we thought it might be.
Okay.
We talked a lot about transitioning him off of breastfeeding very quickly. But we decided that it would probably be really hard for him and Riva to do that right away, especially after he's gone through this really traumatic week-long hospital visit. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the decision point to keep doing it. We revisited and since made around it a lot, but pre-bolusing became very key to maintaining any kind of breastfeeding regime. And so we were really glad we found the juice box community, and that helped us with a lot of it.
So the breastfeeding without a pre-bolus was shooting blood sugar to where?
400.
How quickly?
Pretty quickly. The task, as I described it to Riva, is we were trying to take an unknown carb-containing liquid, unknown quantity of it, and then unknown amount of carbs in the quantity. Mm-hmm. That's what we started with.
We don't know what's in here. And
exactly.
So, and did you always feel comfortable that he'd latch and drink?
Oh, yeah. Okay. He was a good, you know, breastfeeder by that good little nursling. He always latched, and Robin, he were quite a, you know, dyad. So the
Adam,
way we got around it was,
Adam, I got to tell you, you're going to use dyad on this podcast. You're going to have to define it, or you're going to have trouble. People are going to be like,
Team.
A team just means two people on a team.
I know. I got people out there listening now going, they're a dyad. What the? Hold on a second. They're Googling like crazy. So you know he's going to eat well. Is it still difficult to make that decision the first time? Like, we're going to give insulin before food?
Well, we started looking at what the hospital was telling us to do, and it just wasn't adding up for me, logic-wise. It's like, wait a second, you want us to wait until after he eats? Till his blood sugar's rocketing up, and then give insulin? Yeah, it just didn't make any sense to me. So we started, you know, we're not laying claim to inventing pre-bolusing or anything, but we started getting the idea that, well, this isn't really a great idea to bolus after eating. Mm-hmm. And then as we became more familiar with the juice box community, it was like, oh, this is kind of what makes more sense. It's like, give him some insulin before, and if he happens to eat more after, you can always top him up.
Right. What allows you to hear what the doctor told you, see what's actually happening, and make the leap? Because I find that's where people get stuck. They see it, they make sense to them, but they can't go against what they've been told.
Yes, on my end, it's delving deep into the biology of it and being really, really confident in that. Mm-hmm. And I guess at some point you just got to believe that you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that while an endocrinologist knows how to manage all this, they're not in the weeds like you're in the weeds. And you have to make decisions on the ground that they're never faced with.
And Riva, how in the world did you allow this dullard to make this decision? Like, what, were you guys on board? Did you have a conversation about it?
I discovered Juicebox when Sawyer was sleeping on me in the NICU the first night.
Oh.
I read a thread where I think someone was asking for advice for their newly diagnosed baby or toddler, and everyone rushed in and said, don't leave the hospital without a CGM and listen to Juicebox.
Oh, that's great.
So when I started seeing people the next morning coming into his room, and I said, I want a Dexcom today.
How'd that go?
And we, I think they thought it was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
With this sleep deprived person in a traumatic situation with a little baby was demanding to still breastfeed and to have a CGM. Like, I was really empowered by reading Juicebox all night.
Oh, I'm glad. It makes me feel, I don't know how to explain it to you. We don't have a therapist here to explain to you how I feel, but thank you. You made me feel nice. I'm happy you found it. How did you find it?
I just Googled.
Really?
And somehow, I'm not even on Facebook, but I got an account that night. Somebody said, do this, read this person.
Yeah.
And I know I could guess. I have theory of mind about how maybe that makes you feel, but it's the truth. You changed our lives.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad it's going better. And that you, honestly, that you started so soon, that's the part that makes me the happiest, because I've just heard too many stories about people who get on the wrong path and takes, you know, you get lulled into believing that's the right path, and then it takes years and sometimes medical issues for people to wonder out loud, you know, maybe I should be looking at something else. That's terrific. Good for you. You actually got them to bring you a CGM in the hospital?
Yeah, they brought me a sample.
That's cool. That's very cool.
And no one knew how to place it. So they pulled somebody whose husband had one. She came in. I was in the shower in the hospital room. And Adam you know, stuck it on his arm and click. And we didn't have the right phone for it. Adam found an old one in a drawer at our house. I will say from diagnosis onward, like it was on for Adam and I. We just jumped into like, let's do this right. Let's try to continue to make an awesome life for our family. It's not to say it didn't push us down. We've been pretty ground down by it, of course.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much to be expected. Yeah. You know, and on top of that, we're not even talking about it, but you just said at the beginning, your oldest is neurodivergent, but what does that mean?
Yeah, I was trying to think about how much of his story I would want to tell. Just to say, multiple overlapping diagnoses, intellect north of 99th percentile, super awesome, high needs kid.
Okay. Wow. Did it come with medical issues?
Newly, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so you were pretty tired to begin with. What made you keep having children? I think it's kind of a reasonable question. When you hit a struggle in the beginning, I mean, it slowed us down. I think we thought we were going to have three kids. So yeah.
We love having a family. We wanted to build a family and I wanted four kids. So we're stopping. It did slow us down.
You know, are you sure you don't want to just try one more time?
Now we're unable to, and we're too old and poor now.
Old, poor. You don't even have enough energy to have sex. What are you talking about? Wait, how do we make the... I can't do that. Never mind.
What's your name again?
Yeah, no kidding. Kelly jokes sometimes, and she's like, what if we had another baby right now? I was like, I would probably die. I think I would just shut off. It's not the desire. Like the thought of doing it is like kind of exciting, right? But I don't know where the energy would come from. I really don't. I mean, Arden's home from college for a few months and it's fantastic, but she's going back in like 8 days. And there's part of me that's like, oh, good. I'm having trouble keeping up with just the extra laundry. It's like, that might be a comment about her clothes, being a clothes horse too. I'm not sure. But nevertheless, so, you come home with a CGM, you find a phone, you're running, you're seeing things. So you get to be more aggressive with the breastfeeding because you can see it. That's kind of brilliant. Injections at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long did you do MDI for or a pen?
Yeah, it was 2 months.
Not long.
What? No, they were really good about getting us the paperwork we needed because Omnipod had just come out. He's on Omnipod 5. But it had just come out a few months before that, and it wasn't approved for, you know, at the time he was 15 months old. Mm-hmm. So we had to get special permission to use it. A few other things, but once that all came through, there was a backlog on training, and you have to do the training before you can use it. So we were kind of chomping at the bit, even for 2 months. We were like, we know this is going to get way better. Getting in the weeds on the EpiPens come in 0.5 increments. Sorry, not EpiPens, but insulin.
Yeah, half and units.
You probably remember, Scott, but the 0.5 increment is not that accurate.
And often way too much when they're so small. Yeah.
And so we were doing the best we could. This is two parents hitting it with everything we could. Best days were 45% or in.
What was the range you were trying for?
I mean, we're overachievers. We wanted 90%.
That all you were shooting for was 90% of what range? What was your low and what was your high?
With MDI?
Yeah.
I think Riva got one day 80, 90%.
Babe.
And then.
Yeah, you didn't hear me twice. She's going to give it to you now. Go ahead, Riva. Give it to him.
He's wondering what Saw's range is.
Oh,
So I think it's 70 to 180.
70 to 180. Correct. Now, how many nights will he have to sleep on the sofa for that? What you've just done now, Adam.
No, it's fine. He's actually
Thank you for saying that.
It's okay, Adam. You can still sleep in, you know.
In the room.
The room.
On the floor next to the bed, Adam. No problem. One sheet and a half a pillow. No, I'm just teasing you. You guys have I actually recognize your banter from my wife and I. Like, so it's sweet. Like, I wonder if people hear it the way I do, but I hear it as very playful and yeah. Loving actually. So,
yeah,
you big dummy. Now, I don't believe we've shared with people. You both hold a PhD in something. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
She got hers first.
Of course. No, it's why I'm enjoying making fun of you, because I imagine your IQs are like 150. And
yeah, it's not very nice to make fun of people's intelligence if they're not smart.
Oh, yeah, it's a good point. I didn't consider it, but you do make a good point.
We get made fun of a lot. I'm just kidding.
Is nothing. This is going to sound fairly elitist for a second, but I have a fairly high IQ. I guess I do a good job of like being blue collar on TV, because I am. But I've mentioned it in the past. Like, I was adopted by like lovely blue collar people. Mm-hmm. I grew up very, very broke and blue collar, but my IQ is pretty impressive. Probably not compared to yours, but. I love it when I meet somebody who I think, oh, I am dumb to that person. That's interesting. it's a real moment when you're like, oh, I'm an idiot in this scenario. It's like, okay. Anyway, I like it. It keeps you from, you know, getting too full of yourself. Anyway, after we're done recording, we'll all compare IQs.
Rather would win.
Please.
There's not much point compared.
First of all, there's a thing people don't want to hear about. And actually, my wife is the only person I've ever met, like personally, whose IQ is higher than mine. And I was like, well, this is a good move. I'll get like this girl because she can keep me in line.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you go to a Dash first? You go right to Omnipod 5. Right to 5. Okay. And the, what were the basal needs at that point? Do you remember?
So he was prescribed 0.1 units per hour.
0.1. Okay.
When we were at MDI, it was 2 units of Lantus per day, once a day.
And so the pump worked for you, was no trouble.
It doubled our time in range instantly.
Wow. Jeez, that's amazing. And the algorithm works well for him?
No.
Yeah. So how do you make it work?
So let's put a caveat on that. It works really well at night. Mm-hmm. And we sleep better for it. Okay. So huge win right there. During the day, it would pause insulin too frequently and too long. My theory is because he was getting 0.1 per hour. That's a rounding error to most users of the Omnipod 5, is my guess. And so it would just not give him enough basal, and then he would rock it up when we'd feed him. So we run intricate basal programs during the day now. And then flip them over to automated at night.
Good for you. You think when he gets bigger, it'll be easier?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's part of me that thinks you're going to be able to rattle this off the top of your head. But just if you can't specifically, just generally, like, what is the basal profile you set up for him that works during the day?
That's an easy question to answer. We talk about it all the time and the adjustments we make. So he begins the day with what we call breakfast basal. And that is, so his regular basal rate now is probably 0.3 or 0.4 per hour. And he gets 0.9 an hour for 3 hours.
through the breakfast.
And that makes sure that anything he eats doesn't send him out of range.
Yeah. What's the time for that? What time of day is that? 3 hours?
5:30 to 8:30 in the morning.
Okay. Where does it go after the 0.9?
And then we step down to 0.7, 0.5 over the next 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Because at that point, he's going to try to take a nap.
Okay. But the food's still having some impact.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we still need to get the insulin network up and feeding his cells.
Now, do you ramp it back up for lunch?
Yeah. So we ramp it down for nap, and he gets 0.2 an hour when he's sleeping. Mm-hmm. And then sort of at 1 o'clock, we start ramping it up again. And he generally wakes up between 1 and 1:30, and he'll have something to eat soon after that. He doesn't wake up super starved or like he's missed lunch or anything, but we usually try to let the basil, a little heavier basil soak in, and then we feed him.
Yeah, that's amazing. You guys are doing a great job. You know, right?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Yeah. Like, you, I mean, it's nice to hear it, but I imagine you're aware. How often do adjustments need to be made as he's gaining weight? Time? How do you do it?
Yeah, so we usually find we have to go up his basal rate a little every few months. Mm-hmm. When he gets sick, we have other basal programs we run, depending whether it's a rhinovirus where he needs more basal, or if it's a gastrovirus, he'll need less. So those are kind of the adjustments we made.
Yeah.
And then also growth hormone, which yeah. can really
and you're seeing,
throw things off.
You're seeing that overnight mostly?
Mostly.
Okay.
Sometimes we see it in nap, but mostly at night.
Okay.
He'll just kind of start going diagonal up, not stop for a couple hours. And we bolus sometimes for that if it's getting really up there, but mostly we let the Omnipod take care of it. Mm-hmm.
I wish I had you guys.
Kind of a slow march.
I wish I had you guys when Arden was two. Should have seen me back then with those half unit insulin pens and syringes and juice boxes everywhere, and testing while she was napping constantly, and staring at her while she was napping, and wondering what the hell was going on with that stupid meter and nothing else. Yeah, I wish somebody would have. I should have made this podcast sooner for myself, is what I was thinking while I was listening to you. Because you're having them, as crazy as it sounds, and it does sound crazy, you're having a much better time of this than I did. So yeah. I'm glad for
you. We think that all the time. Yeah. We're very grateful for the advanced medical devices that we have. We think how much harder it would have been even a year before.
Oh, no kidding. It's you. Jeez. I wish I still had that old meter so you could see it. It was all my gear was a meter and test strips and these just needles that were everywhere that we still have some, by the way, if we ever give Arden an injection, like we're like, hey, I'm not sure if your pump site's bad or not. Like, let's try to inject here. I'm working from needles that we bought, I mean, roughly 11 years ago that are just still in a drawer. They work great, by the way. Every time I pull one out, it's like I get into a time machine and go back to a time when I was just panicked constantly and really exhausted. So, okay. So Omnipod 5 is doing great for you overnight. You're using it in manual mode during the day. My last question about that is, was there a learning curve to switching out of manual into auto and out of auto into manual?
Yeah, we tried running it in auto during the day when we first got, but we would get these really big spikes when he was eating. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of decided, okay, well, we at least have to put it in manual during the day and we'll do the prescribed basal rate. And that allowed us to make these intricate basal programs that we use now with breakfast basil and sick basil and all that. So
Adam, what about when you're coming out of the daytime out of the manual and you've been using much more basil than the algorithm expects? Do you have trouble with lows coming out of manual into auto, or have you figured out how to do that pretty well?
Yeah, it seems to be pretty good at it. Mm-hmm. We haven't had much trouble with that. Again, overnight, it kind of depends on the night if he's going to get growth hormone.
Yeah. Okay.
So it...
It's not been a problem.
Yeah, not really. Not a persistent one, but maybe Rava wants to chime in on a little bit more on that.
But I don't really understand the question.
So my thought, what I'm seeing with some people is if they do manual during the day and then go into automation, the automation, if they come out of it with a big, like, insulin on board number, the automation can't stop a low that's coming. So you have to kind of learn when to flip it back into auto. And I was just wondering if that was the thing. It doesn't sound like it was a problem for you.
I mean, we're calculating, you know, what's the IOB, what are the carbs on board when we're putting them to bed. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we get it wrong, often. So we're putting a sweet tart in his mouth while he's sleeping, or, you know, we're watching it. If he's going to go low, we just, you know, treat him and keep letting auto do its thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it sounds like a good plan. What am I not bringing up that I should be?
Well, what do you want to know about breastfeeding a Beatty's baby?
I could explain how we kind of got to a point of being able to bolus well for it.
Yeah, please.
So in the hospital, they told us that breast milk has 2 grams per carb per ounce. And so that's what we went with for a while. And trial and error, mostly error, showed us that wasn't the case at all. Even when you'd have what Rafa would say, an ounce or small amount, he would go up really quickly, diagonal up or straight up. And so we gradually started assuming it was more carbs per ounce. And Riva got better at estimating the number of ounces that she had available and that he would eat. And so we gradually got to a number of 5 grams per ounce.
Okay.
And that's all really dynamic too. We had to go with an average. Mm-hmm. There's lots of people that suggested get your breast milk analyzed for the number of carbs in it. But Riva can chime in and tell how dynamic that number actually is. So even getting it tested once, it's just a snapshot in time. That
is it impacted, Riva, by what you eat? Or no?
I don't know that carbs specifically are impacted by what I eat. But I can say that generally the composition of breast milk is, Adam's using the word dynamic. It's a word that's often used. Mm-hmm. Breast milk starts out very high fat for a newborn. It'll change over time. The milk that's at the front of your breast is higher in carbs and lower in fat. It's called the foremilk.
Okay.
There's then milk that if the baby would keep eating, it's called hind milk. So that's got the fat. Mm-hmm. If the baby is sick, the milk becomes fattier, higher in protein.
Yeah.
And it develops antibodies that are specific to a virus a baby may have.
How do it know? how does it know what's? I mean, that's crazy. It feels a little crazy, but that's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
There's receptors in the nipple. Adam would, I don't know, maybe know more about the science of it, but that when the virus in the baby's mouth is transferred to the nipple, it changes the milk over the course of a couple of hours and days.
That's insane. He actually went to feed Sawyer. He just sent a note. So,
okay. Yeah. I was going to ask him to go feed him.
Yeah. So,
somebody will do it. Yeah.
So you're telling me that's insane. So the virus that's in a baby, the nipple senses it, changes the milk to help the baby.
Correct. It's like personalized medicine.
Huh. I didn't know they could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else can nipples do that I don't know about? I'm not going to Google that.
MacGyver. Yeah.
Just afraid of what'll happen. So, oh, that's insane. It really is. Can I ask a mom question?
Sure.
Your middle one.
Yeah.
Do you worry about that? The like focusing on needs that then you run out of time?
Oh.
If your oldest needs things and your youngest needs things, then your middle one's just kind of chugging along.
So she's our only girl. I did find out recently that siblings of kids with differences and disabilities are sometimes called glass children.
Really?
Because for two reasons. One, they may become fragile. The idea that they may be not having their needs met. Mm-hmm. And then also that they report a feeling that their parents maybe looked right through them. Looked past them when they're growing up. We worry about all our kids in the sense that we want to walk with them on their journeys and be the supports that they need. Mm-hmm. So some of them are in something called child-centered play therapy. Some of them have their needs being met in other ways. The best support we can give to her is to put her in public school and have her in front of opportunities where she can do her own thing.
Nice.
It's good for her. She loves it. Yeah. It's a good fit with her personality to kind of be out in the world.
Good. That's excellent. I mean, I think being aware of it's probably one of the best things you could do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the example I always kind of fall to is even if in families where there's no trouble, they know like that you can, just point to easily. Sometimes you just have a kid who doesn't need as much help with their homework and the parents give more help to the one that does. And you can later get reported back as they get older. Like, nobody helped me with my homework. Mm-hmm. And they'll say like, I didn't need it, but that's not the point. It's not how it feels, So. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just nice if your parents turn to you and are like, hey, how's it going? You need help?
Yeah.
And there's only so many hours in the day. It's just,
oh my gosh.
There's not enough. There's just not enough time. There just isn't enough time. Do you see a light at the end of this tunnel for you as far as time and effort goes?
Like I think Adam said, just recently we've graduated ourselves from the quagmire to just a pickle to now we were trying to figure out what's this season called. And, Adam the other day says, I've got it. This is the new normal. And it felt really good to think now we're just living.
Yeah. Just this, maybe every moment's not going to be a horror and that you can do, you guys have do you have a rhythm now?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the main challenges we have now, and I would say have had since diagnosis, is that Sawyer is little and babies and toddlers are annoying. It's a lot. His toddlerness is often harder to manage than his diabetes.
Yeah. Oh, that's kind of nice to know, don't you think?
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's very nice to know, actually. So the diabetes, as it becomes more familiar and your experiences build up, you start kind of knowing what to do more intuitively. It does fade into the background.
And I remember you saying that. Maybe you say it all the time, but you said on a podcast I listened to maybe 1 or 2 weeks post-diagnosis, you said one day it just fades into the background. Mm-hmm. I think I really held on to that And in the, you know, in those wee hours of the morning when things were difficult, and like you just said, when everything feels like a nightmare, I just thought, you know, eventually this will be part of our lives. And we were already tuned into, you know, what I refer to as differences and disabilities because of our oldest. Mm-hmm. We'd already become sensitive to parenting a child with the unique path. And we hope that this would sort of fall into some kind of rhythm too, eventually.
Yeah, I mean, and yours is a positive rhythm too. Some people fall into a negative one where they just don't understand the insulin or, you know, and then that just becomes a completely different story. So your story is, it's so weird to say, because I know it doesn't feel like that probably, but it's a success. You know, you have a success story here. It's wonderful, honestly. I feel really good about it. You're too tired to feel good about it, but... From the
outside. We do feel good about it.
Good. Oh, we Adam's do. Back. That was nice. What did he eat? Was that
what
like?
What did Saw eat, Bob?
Oh, I gave him a Kind bar. So it's got nuts and a little bit of chocolate.
Was that for a low blood sugar or just hungry?
He was trending down. So it just kind of, we're not in the treatment territory. It's just a good thing that'll bump them up and be pretty even.
This doesn't need insulin because of the situation?
Yeah, he's gotten kind of gastro-buggy the last day or so.
Oh, okay.
So we're trying to like ramp down the basal, but I think we've got a little too much on right now. So he was just coming down more than he should have been.
A little heavy.
Yeah.
I've been, I'm trying a new algorithm with Arden. So I just put it on like 24 hours ago. And I'm doing a lot of staring, trying to, like, is this right? Do I turn this knob? Not yet. Maybe. What is this happening? So that'll go on for a couple of days before we decide if we're going to try this one for a while or not. But anyway, it resharpens my skills. Arden's like, why are we doing this? She's like, loop three works great. I was like, I know. I'm like, let's just try this and see what happens. As you could always just, now that they're just, you know, when you do DIY, it's just two apps on her phone. Like, I just shut one off and try the other one. And if you don't like it, you can just restart a pod with the old one and just go right back to what you were doing. So, giving IAPS a shot and seeing how that's going, which I can say on here, cause nobody will hear this for like 6 months. So I have plenty of time to cover myself. Okay, like, so let's get to the most important question, and I'll let you guys get back to your life. When you listen to the podcast, it's on two different devices, right? So I get two downloads? It's not just one?
Okay. I read the transcripts.
Oh, forget my question then. Thank you for bringing that up. I never know who the hell's looking at those. So
Moms.
So you read the podcast.
I have to read it. So our oldest is homeschooled, mm-hmm. and Saw is here. They're always with me, and we're pretty careful about what content they hear. And especially our oldest is, you know, understands everything he hears. Mm-hmm. So I read them on my phone when I'm putting someone to bed, when I'm cooking. I have it open. I'm reading it bits and pieces.
I'm not appropriate for your 9-year-old is what you're saying. I agree.
You can't listen to much.
Oh,
I also try to make sure they don't get a huge, heavy dose of diabetes talk all the time.
I think that's smart too. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good idea. I also don't think I'm appropriate for 9-year-olds in case anyone.
Well, that too. We were just being kind. We're Canadian.
No. Oh, you're Canadian. I didn't realize.
We'll apologize for that after the podcast.
Explicitly and for hours. we're so sorry. We don't know why. That's a thing, right? But that's like an expense for me. And
I know.
And it's time, and I do it, and I'm like, is anyone looking at this? But I know people do. It's just so hard to imagine, like, for people who wouldn't think to do it. I don't know if that makes sense or not. But I'm glad it's there. That's great. They're getting better and better. I was looking into a new company recently who runs the transcript. And at the same time, each transcript gets its own AI bot. And so instead of asking a question of the whole website, which AI doesn't seem to be up to still, it is very good when you only give it a few thousand words. So, for example, Jenny and I did a math of basal insulin or ISF or something like that, where we just have it's a chatty conversation about how to set up a setting. And I've been messing with it. If you go to that AI and say, I weigh this much, and I forget what else you have to say to it, like something very simple, what's my insulin sensitivity factor? Like, what's a good starting place for it? It actually goes through the text and comes back and gives you an answer. It's crazy. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I have an imagination where one day you'll be able to go to the website and ask diabetes questions and get rock solid answers from out of the AI coming out of the text. So anyway, that's one of my long-term goals that I don't tell anybody about. So anybody who's listening right now, don't bother going and looking because I didn't do it yet. But it's happening. So, I'm so glad you do that. All right. So fine. So you can't just download them and delete them to help me. I don't understand, Rive. I don't really ask for a whole lot.
I can't do that.
Just teasing you. We're on to one of our best months ever as we're talking. Looking at the countdown for the next 36 hours. And I'm like, I think we're going to make it to a pretty cool number. So anyway, you guys were terrific. I really do appreciate this. Thank you so much.
You do too.
Yeah, no. Oh, no, it's my pleasure. It really is.
We're very happy to give back.
Oh, and you definitely have. This is a terrific conversation. So, I mean, this is how the podcast grows. Everybody gets done and they'll say to me, like, we'll get done recording. And sometimes people will go, I'll understand if you don't use that. And I'm like, what? Aww. I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. I was like, no. How many of these do you think I've never used? It's like, you think I'm just recording and going, not that one, not that one. You've pretty much heard every conversation I've ever had with people with diabetes. And, you know, everybody comes from a different perspective. And, you know, I think in the end, it ends up helping somebody. So terrific. So seriously. Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate it. Can you hold on for a minute for me?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by Touched by Type 1. TouchedByType1.org. If you're looking for a great organization to support, someone who's supporting people with type 1 diabetes the way you would like, you're looking for Touched by Type 1. TouchedByType1.org, or find them on Facebook and Instagram. They're longtime sponsors of the podcast, and they're out there doing great things for people with type 1 diabetes. A huge thank you to Eversense CGM for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Are you tired of having to change your sensor every 7 to 14 days? With the Eversense CGM, you just replace it once every 6 months via a simple in-office visit. Learn more and get started today at eversensecgm.com/juicebox. The Diabetes Variables series from the Juice Box podcast goes over all the little things that affect your diabetes that you might not think about. From travel and exercise to hydration and even trampolines. Juiceboxpodcast.com. Go up in the menu and click on Diabetes Variables. If you're looking for community around type 1 diabetes, check out the Juice Box Podcast private Facebook group, Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes. But everybody is welcome. Type 1, type 2, gestational, loved ones, it doesn't matter to me. If you're impacted by diabetes and you're looking for support, comfort, or community, check out Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes on Facebook. If you're not already subscribed or following in your favorite audio app, please take the time now to do that. It really helps the show. And get those automatic downloads set up so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back very soon with another episode of the Juice Box Podcast. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording. WrongWayRecording.com.